Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. You know, it's hard to believe it's already 2025.
I know, right?
And we're already jumping into such a, well, a heavy topic, but a really important one.
Yeah.
We asked you to send in some articles that you thought we should take a deep dive into. And this one really stood out to me. Confronting the Rise of White Supremacy, a Call to Action for White Americans. And I have to admit, this one really kind of hit me, especially with the anniversary of January 6th, so fresh in our minds.
Yeah, the timing is definitely, you know, pretty stark. Yeah. We're all kind of grappling with those echoes of that attack. And this article is really pushing us to confront some uncomfortable truths about the ideologies that fueled it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not just about January 6th. This article throws out a statistic that really stopped me in my tracks. Over 8,263 hate crime incidents recorded by the FBI in 2021. That's a huge jump from the year before.
It is.
It makes you wonder, like, is this becoming the new normal?
It's the question we need to be asking ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But to even begin to unpack that, we have to go deeper than just the numbers.
Okay.
What exactly is white supremacy? It's more than just the blatant racism we might think of. It's a whole system, a way of thinking that's been woven into the fabric of our country for centuries.
Okay, so it's not just about like the KKK or neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
How does the system actually play out?
Well, think about it like this. It's about power.
Okay.
Historically, white supremacy has been the driving force behind things like slavery and Jim Crow laws. Those weren't just isolated incidents. They were tools to maintain a hierarchy where white people held all the cards. And here's where it gets really disturbing. Those historical systems have echoes in our present. Voter suppression tactics, disproportionate incarceration rates, the wealth gap. These are all modern day manifestations of that same power imbalance.
Whoa. You know, I think a lot of people hear white supremacy and think of, you know, guys in white robes, but you're saying it's much more subtle and insidious than that. It's baked into our institutions and policies.
Like, it kind of makes you look at things differently, huh?
It's a tough reality to face. But understanding the historical context is key to recognizing how it operates today. And the scary part is, it's not just confined to the history books or the fringes of society. This article points to the way social media and the internet have become breeding grounds for these ideologies.
That was the part that really chilled me. It talked about how online spaces can become echo chambers where these ideas fester and grow.
Exactly.
And they even mentioned how groups are using coded language and memes to spread their messages, almost making it seem cool or trendy.
It's the perfect storm, really. You have anonymity, algorithms designed to keep you hooked, and targeted messaging that preys on people's insecurities and anxieties. It's no wonder so many, especially young people, are getting sucked into these online rabbit holes of hate. And it's not just passive consumption either. It's the potential for radicalization.
I know you're not supposed to read the comments, but sometimes I can't help myself. And honestly, the amount of hateful rhetoric you see online is just, it's overwhelming. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? How much of this online hate spills over into the real world? How much of it normalizes these dangerous ideologies? It's something we all need to be asking ourselves. What are we seeing online? And how is it shaping our understanding of this issue?
It's a wake-up call for sure. This article doesn't let anyone off the hook. It talks about this thing called the bystander effect. And it really made me think about my own actions, or rather inaction.
The bystander effect is a fascinating psychological phenomenon. It basically says that the more people who witness something bad happening, the less likely anyone is to intervene.
Yeah.
It's almost like we subconsciously diffuse responsibility. Someone else will handle it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or we think, what can I even do? It's not my problem.
Yeah.
But in the context of racism and white supremacy, that kind of thinking is deadly. Turning a blind eye just allows the problem to fester and grow.
And here's where the real challenge lies. Breaking free from that bystander mentality. Because even small acts of resistance, speaking up against a racist joke, or challenging a prejudiced comment, can chip away at the normalization of these ideologies. It's about shifting the culture, one conversation at a time.
So it's not just about understanding white supremacy, but about actively pushing back against it.
Absolutely. This article is a call to action, a reminder that we can't afford to be passive observers. It's time to get uncomfortable and start dismantling this system brick by brick.
Okay, so we've established that white supremacy is more than just like overt racism. It's a deeply ingrained system that impacts everything from our laws to our online spaces. But how do we actually like start to dismantle something so pervasive? Where do we even begin?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the article doesn't offer any easy answers. but it does provide some concrete steps we can take. It starts by challenging us to be more aware, more vigilant in recognizing the signs of white supremacy in our everyday lives.
That's the part where they talk about recognizing signs of white supremacy, right? I have to admit, some of those examples were pretty eye-opening. It's like, I knew those things existed, but I never really thought about them as being connected to this larger system.
It's easy to dismiss those things as isolated incidents or personal prejudices, but the article argues that we need to see them for what they are, symptoms of a deeper problem.
Okay.
Take the Confederate flag, for example. For some, it's a symbol of Southern heritage. But let's be real, it's also been co-opted by white supremacist groups as a symbol of hate and oppression.
I've definitely seen that shift in how the flag is perceived, especially in recent years. It's become a much more charged symbol. But the article also points out that white supremacy can show up in less obvious ways, like coded language.
Yeah.
They gave the example of colorblindness, which on the surface sounds like a good thing, right?
Right. It's a classic example of how good intentions can actually perpetuate harm. Saying, I don't see color, might seem like a way to promote equality, but it ignores the very real experiences of people of color and dismisses the systemic inequalities that are rooted in race. It's basically saying, let's just pretend racism doesn't exist, which of course it does.
It's like sweeping the problem under the rug instead of actually addressing it.
Exactly.
And what about those online spaces we talked about earlier? The article mentions how white supremacist groups use coded language and memes to spread their messages, almost making it seem cool or edgy.
That's one of the most insidious tactics they use. Mm-hmm. They take these hateful ideologies and package them in ways that are palatable, even appealing to a wider audience. And it's especially effective with young people who are already bombarded with information and looking for a sense of belonging.
It's like they're trying to rebrand hate, make it seem mainstream.
Right.
But beyond the symbols and the language, the article also talks about behaviors we should watch out for.
Right, because it's not just about what people say. But what they do, participating in rallies or events that promote exclusionary ideologies, engaging in online forums that espouse hate speech, or even just demonstrating aggression or hostility towards marginalized groups, these are all red flags.
So it's about paying attention to the whole picture, the language, the symbols, the actions. And the article makes the point that these signs might not always be overt or obvious.
Exactly. It's like trying to spot a chameleon. Blending in with its surroundings. White supremacy can be insidious, weaving itself into the fabric of our society in ways that can be hard to detect. That's why this awareness, this ability to recognize the signs is so crucial.
It's like that saying, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
A real mind shift.
Absolutely. And the article stresses that this awareness isn't just for individuals, it's for communities as a whole. It's about creating a culture where white supremacy isn't tolerated, where people are empowered to speak out and challenge hate when they see it.
Okay, so let's say we've done the work of educating ourselves and becoming more aware of the signs. What's the next step? How do we actually start to dismantle this system?
Well, the article offers a few key strategies, and they all revolve around this idea of collective action. It's not enough to just be aware of the problem. We need to actively work together to change the systems and structures that perpetuate white supremacy.
So it's not just about individual actions, but about a collective effort to create real systemic change.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that this is a fight we can't win alone. We need to join forces, build coalitions, and use our collective power to challenge the status quo.
And one of the first things the article mentions is the importance of education, both for ourselves and for others.
Absolutely. It's about going beyond the surface level understanding of racism and really digging deep into the historical context, the systemic inequalities, the ways in which white privilege operates.
So it's about challenging our own biases and assumptions, being willing to learn from the experiences of others, and then using that knowledge to educate those around us.
Exactly. It's about having those difficult conversations with family and friends, educating our children about these issues, and using whatever platform we have to amplify the voices of marginalized communities. It's about breaking the silence and creating a ripple effect of awareness and understanding.
You know, it's interesting. The article frames education not just as a way to learn, but as a form of action in itself. Like, the more we educate ourselves and others, the more we chip away at the foundation of white supremacy.
That's a powerful way to think about it, because knowledge is power. And the more we understand the root causes of this problem, the better equipped we are to address it.
Okay, so education is key. But what about concrete actions we can take? The article talks about supporting anti-racist organizations, right?
That's a huge one. There are so many incredible organizations out there doing the groundwork, fighting for racial justice, providing resources to communities of color, and advocating for policy changes. These groups are on the front lines, and they need our support.
And that support can take many forms, right? It's not just about donating money, but also volunteering our time, spreading the word about their work, amplifying their messages.
Exactly. Every little bit helps. And the article also emphasizes the importance of engaging in our local communities.
Like attending community events that promote diversity and understanding.
Yes. It's about building relationships across cultural divides, listening to the experiences of others, and working together to create a more just and equitable society. It's about bridging the gap between intention and action, turning our awareness into concrete steps toward change.
So it's about showing up, being present, and being active participants in a fight against white supremacy.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to the article's final call to action, creating a collective movement against hate.
That's where things get really inspiring, right? It's about recognizing that this fight is bigger than any one individual or organization. It's about building alliances across diverse communities, pooling our resources, and working together to dismantle white supremacy in all its forms.
It's about understanding that this is not just a fight for people of color. It's a fight for all of us. Because when one community is oppressed, we are all diminished. We are all connected.
It's like that saying, none of us are free until all of us are free. It's about recognizing that our liberation is bound together.
Exactly. And that's what makes this call to action so powerful. It's a reminder that we have the power to create a different future. A future where white supremacy is relegated to the history books, where all people are treated with dignity and respect, and where justice and equity prevail.
It's a vision worth fighting for, but it also feels overwhelming, you know? Like, where do we even start? What can one person really do to make a difference in the face of something so massive?
That's a valid feeling, and the article acknowledges that this work can be daunting. But it also reminds us that every journey starts with a single step. Even small acts of resistance, like speaking up against a racist joke or educating ourselves about the issues, can contribute to the larger movement for change.
So it's about finding our place in that movement, figuring out how our unique skills and passions can contribute to the collective effort.
Exactly. And the beauty of it is that there's no one right way to get involved. Mm-hmm. Some people are natural activists, while others might find their strength in education or community organizing. The key is to find what resonates with you.
Yeah.
And commit to taking action.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I think the question for all of us is, what's our next step? What action, big or small, can we take to contribute to this collective movement against hate?
It's a question worth pondering, and we'll be back soon to continue our exploration and to delve deeper into the complexities of this critical issue.
We're back for this final part of our deep dive into confronting white supremacy. And I have to say, this conversation has really stayed with me. It's made me think about my own role in this whole system where I've been complicit, where I need to step up. It's a lot to process.
It is. And I think that's a healthy response. This isn't about guilt or shame. It's about recognizing the reality of white supremacy and our responsibility to dismantle it. And this article we've been discussing really drives home the point that this is an ongoing process, a journey, not a destination.
One thing that keeps coming up for me is how pervasive this ideology is. It's not just about like the obvious hate groups. It's baked into our culture, our institutions, even our language.
Right.
It's almost like we're all swimming in it, whether we realize it or not.
That's a powerful image. And I think it speaks to the insidious nature of white supremacy. It's not always loud and aggressive. Sometimes it's quiet and subtle, almost invisible. And that's why this article's emphasis on education and awareness is so crucial. Mm-hmm. We need to shine a light on those hidden corners, those subtle biases and assumptions that perpetuate this system of oppression.
And that education needs to start early, right?
It does.
We can't just wait until people are adults to start talking about these issues. It's about teaching kids to recognize and challenge racism in all its forms, to value diversity and inclusion, and to understand that we're all in this together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We need to raise a generation that's equipped to dismantle these harmful ideologies and build a more just and equitable world. And it's not just about formal education in schools either. It's about those everyday conversations we have with our families and friends, the books we read, the media we consume, the way we interact with our communities.
It's about being mindful of the language we use, the jokes we tell, the assumptions we make. It's about challenging prejudice and discrimination whenever we see it, even in seemingly small ways.
Because those small actions can have a ripple effect, right? They can shift the culture. Create a space where hate is no longer tolerated. It's about each of us taking responsibility for creating the kind of world we want to live in.
So we've talked about education and awareness, but what about taking concrete steps to support those who are most impacted by white supremacy?
That's where the concept of allyship comes in. It's about using our privilege to support and uplift those who are most marginalized, to stand in solidarity with them, to use our voices to advocate for change.
Allyship isn't just a passive thing, is it?
It's not.
It's about actively working to dismantle systems of oppression.
Right.
But it can feel overwhelming knowing where to start.
It's true. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to allyship. It's a journey, and we all have to find our own way. But here's what I always come back to. Listen, learn, and act. Listen to the voices of marginalized communities. Learn about the issues they face, and then take action to support their struggles.
That's a good framework. Listen, learn, and act. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that this work can be uncomfortable, even painful at times.
Yeah.
We're going to make mistakes, we're going to stumble, and that's okay.
It is okay. In fact, I think those moments of discomfort are crucial. They're opportunities for growth, for deeper understanding. The key is to not let those moments paralyze us, to not let fear or guilt prevent us from taking action.
So it's about showing up even when it's hard, even when we don't have all the answers. It's about being willing to learn and grow and to keep pushing ourselves to do better.
Exactly. And the beautiful thing is, we don't have to do it alone. There are so many incredible people and organizations out there doing this work, and there's a place for everyone in this movement.
It's about finding our place in that movement, figuring out how our unique skills and passions can contribute to the collective effort. And this article, this deep dive we've been on, it's like a roadmap for anyone who wants to get involved. It's full of resources, organizations, action steps we can all take.
It is a call to action, a reminder that we all have a role to play in building a better future. And I want to emphasize, this isn't just about dismantling something harmful. It's about creating something beautiful in its place.
It's about building a world where everyone feels safe, valued, and respected, a world where diversity is celebrated, where differences are seen as strengths, and where justice and equity prevail. It's a vision worth fighting for, even if the road ahead is long and challenging.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it sparked your curiosity, challenged your assumptions, and inspired you to take action.
Until next time, keep diving deep and keep fighting for a better world.